Welcome to Adult Siblings Versus, a podcast where a grown-ass brother and sister put aside their childhood rivalry in order to review nostalgic pieces of pop culture. I'm your co-host, Jason S. Leverett.
And I'm your other co-host, Ariel Leverett.
Well, Ariel, we're recording this in March. That's for sure.
we got it in, at least in that regard.
But as we are recording this, I can tell you right now, that even the second episode of supposedly March Musical Month has not come out yet. So, although it may come out today, later today, we'll see. But I don't think we're made it. I don't think we're going to make it. So I think if you're listening to this, it's probably in April. So welcome to April Musical Month.
just you know, musical spring. You know, where the Well, there's no green, but there's rain instead of snow. Well, no, there is some snow. I don't know.
It's snow. I'm looking out the window. It's snowing right now.
Yeah. There's a welcome to musical. It's technically springtime thing. I don't know.
On any event, if you've skipped the last couple of episodes, you've missed that we are doing a kind of a musical theme, where we're looking at various musicals that we have some sort of attachment to, sort of. It's weird that I say that, because this is the episode where I kind of throw that out the window, where this this time was my choice, and I picked Mary Poppins. Now, why did I pick Mary Poppins? Is it because I had a big nostalgia for it as a child? Well, you know what, Ariel? I was watching this last night, and I think I realized that I've actually never watched this movie all the way through before.
Oh, that's interesting, because I think of like how many times it was playing at our Uncle Rick's place, but I guess a lot of times it's probably just kind of playing in the background, and it's probably a good chance that you weren't actually really sitting watching it.
Yeah, and we didn't own this movie.
That's true. Like, I feel like I remember distinctly that when I watched it, it was usually over there when we were hanging out with our cousins.
Yeah, so I couldn't believe how many things in this movie were completely unfamiliar, because I could have swore I'd watched this as a kid. And I think what it was, we had that one Disney album that had a bunch of classic Disney songs on it, and it had like a bunch of the big hits from Mary Poppins. And I think I just listened to that and just thought I'd watch the movie.
Oh, and don't forget Radio Oz. Radio Oz, the kids' radio station, also played Mary Poppins a lot.
Even before that, I really feel like most of my nostalgia comes from whatever Disney album that we had. Also, sure, the Tiki 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 Room.
I forget about that, because when it comes to random Disney soundtrack kind of albums, the only thing that has kind of like stuck in my heart parts is the Disney Afternoon album, because that's on Spotify. And I re-listen to that shit a lot.
Wait a second. You mean to tell me that you didn't keep in your heart that weird Disney album in which Mickey Mouse, Minnie Mouse, and Goofy team up with R&B artists of the day to do family-friendly covers of classic songs?
Whoop, there it is indeed.
Whoop, there it went, is what right. The name of that song was. Or when Minnie sings a song about what a mouse, what a mouse, what a mouse, what a mighty fine mouse.
God, I forgot about that. Oh, what a time to be alive.
Okay, so long story short, I have no idea why I picked this. I think because I've been, I thought I had nostalgia for it, and it turns out I have zero nostalgia for Mary Poppins. And this whole viewing was a bit of a nightmare. It was a nightmare of my own making.
I was talking to people at work about this, because I was telling my friend about our musical March thing, and she was a person who grew up with Sound of Music, and I was like, you pick one Julie Andrews nanny movie, like one of them is like your Julie Andrews nanny movie. And it's like, well, mine was definitely Mary Poppins. I don't think I actually watched Sound of Music at all when I was actually a child. I think the first time I watched it was maybe I was a teen.
I have yet to watch it.
Well, I think one thing to be I think the biggest distinction between the two, you know, one has suffragettes and one has Nazis, and one has a hot dad and one has a ugly dad. Unfortunately, we got the Uggo dad one here and not the sexy Christopher Plummer Julie Andrews movie. So that's unfortunate, but we does what we can.
Well, we are going to talk about Mary Poppins today, and maybe next year we'll talk about Sound of Music, even though I've never seen it before. So,
if you thought Mary Poppins was long, Sound of Music is longer. Sound of Music has a legit intermission.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about Mary Poppins, but, you know, before that, this... Remind everybody, if you want to get a hold of us, you can email us at adultsiblingsversus@gmail.com. If you want to tweet at us, we are at adultversus on Twitter. And then we also have a Facebook page. Okay, so I think we kind of talked about nostalgia for Mary Poppins. You said that you'd watched it a lot at our cousin's place.
Yeah, it was something to watch while drying off from the pool.
Yeah, they had a pool. That was a big pool.
Yeah, and they had a like projector thing, so we would watch this on like a big screen because they had that projector.
Let's just move on to talking about the movie itself. So, Mary Poppins is a 1964 film adapted from a 1934 children's novel of the same name by P.L. Travers. This movie was directed by Robert Stevenson with screenplay by Bill Walsh and Don DeGrady, but. Let's be real here. This is a Walt Disney production. Mm-hmm. This is Walt's baby. He was heavily involved. Whatever names you want to put on the director chair and the screenplay, it almost doesn't matter. Even if Walt did almost nothing but stand around smoking in the background, the Disney lore has set him up in a deified position, so we have to basically ignore everybody else. Mm. The budget of this movie was somewhere between $4.4 and $6 million. Not sure which. The gross, I have been told, is $103.1 million. Now, as with many movies from like decades past, I don't know if this is from the initial run of the film or if this is a lifetime gross. Because surely Mary Poppins is a film that has been released more than once in theaters. Mm-hmm. Even so, with a budget that could be as low as $4.5 million, to end up with a lifetime gross of $103 million is pretty damn successful. That's a pretty damn successful film. And indeed, Mary Poppins was a huge hit for Disney. It was a universally critically acclaimed. It was the first time Disney had ever had a film nominated for Best Picture at the Academy Awards. Did not win. It did win. It was nominated for like 13 awards, and it won like somewhere between 3 and 6, including Julie Andrews won an Oscar for Best Actress, mm-hmm. which is very impressive considering this is her first film role.
Yeah, I always think about the fact that, you know, Julie Andrews kind of got bamboozled out of not doing My Fair Lady, even though she like starred in it on Broadway, and they were like, we need someone famous. So like Audrey Hepburn got it. And like, Audrey Hepburn got it. But I do love that basically immediately after that, you know, she has Mary Poppins and Sound of Music, and like she's the biggest star, and it's like, you know what? Fuck y'all then. You didn't know what you had.
Yeah, I was actually, I had all that written down.
Oh,
but yeah, it's actually pretty interesting, especially since Audrey Hepburn does not do her own singing in that film.
And, you know, people rewatch Sound of Music and Mary Poppins all the time. Do people rewatch My Fair Lady all the time?
Not to that extent.
Yeah, no, I think not comparable at all. So, you know.
The music box does not have a My Fair Lady sing-along, but they do have Sound of Music sing-along. here's a kind of a funny thing to show you what Disney's mindset was over this whole thing. Because, like, you know, Julie Andrews gets passed over for a role that she originated, this major insult considering that she actually would have sung. But then Disney comes along and says, hey, how would you like to star in our original musical? And she's like, sorry, I can't do it. I'm 3 months pregnant. And then they come back and says, we will wait for you.
I mean, that's smart.
It is the opposite in terms of respect. Like, not only are they like, we want you in this, we're willing to halt production for months to give you as much time as you need to be at top form. And that was her first film role, and it was a smash. It turned her into a superstar, got her an Oscar. It was, you know, really cool. But let's go back a little bit. Production of this film has been, it was going on for a while, but Walt Disney has been trying to get the rights for Mary Poppins for over 20 years. Apparently, according to lore, Disney's kids, his daughters, loved the Mary Poppins book, and they begged him, to make a movie based off of it, and he promised that he would, which was not a good decision. You shouldn't make promises that you can't guarantee, but he promised that he would, so he reached out to P.L. Travers and asked if he can, you know, get the movie rights, and she refused, partially because she didn't think that a movie version of Mary Poppins would work, but also because she thinks cartoons are stupid, and Disney at the time was really only known for cartoons. It was actually Mary Poppins that kind of changed that perception, but that wouldn't be for another 20 years. So at the time, she's just like, no, your cartoons are silly, and Mary Poppins probably wouldn't work on the movie. Now, if you excuse me, I'm going to go back to being somewhat gruff Australian. It took 20 years for Disney to finally convince Travers to give him the rights. But even then, she insisted that she would get to retain script approval rights. Although Walt still had final say above that. He still had like, the final cut rights. So. But because she had such power, she was literally involved in the production from very early on. And she and the Disney side of things butted heads constantly. She really did not like the things they were doing. But almost, it seemed like almost every little thing she seemed to have a problem with. And some things were kind of small, some things were pretty major. Like, for example, Mary Poppins' personality is drastically altered from the original books to this film, and she hated that.
Yeah, have you ever read the book?
I have not, but I had done a little bit of research, and my wife has read the books a lot when she was a kid, so we were talking about that. Sounds like Mary Poppins was kind of a dick in the books.
Yeah. I read the book once, you know, long after I had watched the movie, and I was like, yeah, she's full on like bitchy English nanny, you know, like it's kind of crazy.
Also, apparently he likes to check herself out in the mirror a lot, I heard. Yeah, it's a very high opinion of herself, which she kind of does in this movie, but it sounds like she was way worse in the book.
Yeah,
but yeah, she didn't like the song choices. She hated the idea of having any animation in this at all. She even didn't like the idea of Julie Andrews being cast because she thought she was too pretty to be Mary Poppins. Mm-hmm. And when she met Julie Andrews, she looked at her and said, well, you got the nose for it at least, and then walked away.
Oh, the shade. Oh, that's amazing.
Apparently things got so bad that Disney did not send her an invitation initially to the film premiere. She did get one eventually. Like, I guess someone at Disney missed, like when she saw after it, accidentally gave her an invitation, so she just showed up. And then at the after party of the premiere, she apparently walked over to Walt and said, hey, you know, we really got to take out those animated parts. They really just don't work for the film. And he was like, that ship has sailed. And then he walked away, and that was like the last time they talked. Apparently, like the battles between Travers and the Disney side of things and her relationship with Walt is something itself is like legendary amongst cinema lore, to the point that Disney made a movie about this called Saving Mr. Banks, with Tom Hanks as Walt and Emma Thompson as Travers. And I did see that movie, and I gotta tell you, I have to assume that because this is Disney producing it, they're a little nice about Disney side of thing. But it did sound like Travers may have gotten a little bamboozled more than that movie. And also in that movie, I couldn't help but notice that Tom Hanks barely smokes, which is already like completely a funhouse mirror version of history, if you know anything about Walt Disney.
No, it's funny. I know that I watched that movie. I know I watched Saving Mr. Banks, but I don't remember anything about it.
I believe that they showed her crying with like a sense of like the implication being a sense of like happiness seeing the movie on the big screen, which I suspected was not, did not happen.
Yeah, I remember there was a big argument about adding in the kite stuff. And that was like the big point of like Saving Mr. Banks and making him redeemable, blah blah blah. And whatever. But that's pretty much all I remember.
Yeah. I was going to watch that movie ahead of this. I just didn't have time. So maybe I'll watch it afterwards. Not that it'll do anything. Anyway, so Travers was so upset about how the book... Excuse me. She was so upset about how the movie turned out that she basically refused to allow Disney to adapt any more of her books, which is why there was not a sequel coming out when the iron was hot. Although, you know, Disney's not necessarily the biggest fan of doing sequels, so who knows if that would have happened anyway. I think they might have wanted it. But then, you know, there was some talks years later about it, and then, like, there was a lot of other factors, like Julie Andrews was kind of, like, being a little wishy-washy on whether or not she'd want to reprise the role. Mm. But, yeah, nothing really ever came to it. You know, Travers died in the mid-90s, and I guess her estate is significantly more interested in making that Disney cheddar. Sure. Because they did eventually make a sequel, a decades later sequel, both in reality and in the story, called Mary Poppins Returns, only apparently lightly based off of Mary Poppins Comes Back, which is the actual sequel to the original book. Haven't seen that either. But now that I've rewatched Mary Poppins or watched it for the first time, apparently, now I can watch Mary Poppins Returns, and now it'll make a lot more sense.
Yeah, I watched it. I feel like that was one of the early things I watched upon gaining access to Disney Plus, because I feel like that was one of the first things I had. I can't remember, but yeah, that's fine.
It's fine. It's fine. Does Emily Blunt do her own singing? Because that was a question that my wife and I were asking
when we were talking about this last night. Yeah, she does do her own singing. Obviously, she's not like as strong of a singer as Julie Andrews, but she can sing. You know, she was also in the movie version of Into the Woods as the baker's wife. So like, and with that, I mean, mind you, that movie did have a number of people who were wishy-washy singers, but she was definitely one of the stronger ones. And, it's fine.
Yep, I didn't see that, so I don't know.
Oh, yeah, don't watch the movie version of Into the Woods. Like, they really gotta stop doing movie versions of Sondheim musicals, because they just prove again and again that they don't know how to do it.
Okay. All right, so Ariel, so I did watch Mary Poppins, but at some point during it, everything went black, and I woke up in a pool of blood. Not sure whose blood, but it was so distracting that I kind of forgotten crucial plot points of the film. So could you please tell everybody what happens in Mary Poppins?
Yeah, statistically, you had about a 65% chance that would happen if you tried to watch Mary Poppins. I'm sorry that that happened to you. So the way this movie goes, so you start out in London, and things start with Australian urchin Bert, who's trying to be Cockney. Bert is on the street doing, you know, street performer crap, and he takes the audience over to see the Banks family, who lives on number 17 Cherry Lane, and you're introduced to the mom, who is a kind of flighty woman who is also a suffragette, and she's very focused on that and kind of too flighty to focus a whole lot on her children, but she still is like in their lives. And then you see the dad, Mr. Banks, who is a very cliche English father who likes, you know, kind of likes the idea that of having children in the kind of way where, you know, a successful man has children, but he does not give a shit about his children at all. He just cares about working at the bank. Mr. Banks. You have the kids, Jane and Michael, who are, you know, I think probably a very normal level of precocious. They act like these kids are so bad and they're kind of barely doing anything in the movie. But apparently they really upset their nanny. Their nanny quits, and now we gotta find a new one. Mr. Banks put an ad in the paper for a new one that's going to be proper, strict. The kids also make a cute little notice for a nanny about the things that they want a nanny to be. He's like, "Bah, child happiness," and he rips up the note and throws it in the fireplace. But it magics back together, and the Gallifreyan time lady, Mary Poppins, magically receives this letter and shows up. And, you know, kills all the other nannies trying to apply in a hurricane. And she gets the job. And she basically takes the kids on magical adventures and stuff like that. And all this stuff happens to kind of make Mr. Banks realize that he needs to be an actual parent and, like, show some kind of fucking affection to his small children. And everything works out. And then you have, like, a bunch of dirty chimney sweeps dancing and shit. That's the movie. Oh, I swear, when Jade and Michael are like running through the alley and they bump into Bert and they're so freaked out, all I can think of is like, were they freaked out because they were afraid this was a black man? But that's neither here nor there.
Oh, well, it's just good clean soot, so I'm not really sure what the problem is. Okay, so hey, I hate this movie. Oh boy, this movie made me very unhappy for almost at the beginning, because as soon as Dick Van Dyke looks at the camera,
and you're says, like, I'm out.
He's just like, oh hey, where are you looking for? Are you looking for this address? I'll show it to you. I'm just like, what the is? If wait, what is this? Is he telling me the story of this? Like, is he going to explain this adventure that happened sometime? No, this is in real time. What's happening? Who am I? What is this?
And they don't hold on to this trope at all. Like, it's just a weird thing they do at the beginning, and then it's just, yeah, it's so stupid.
I think he talks to the audience once more when he's doing the chalk drawings, but then aside from that, I don't think it's anything else. Oh my god. Okay, so yeah, it's like, so from the very beginning, I'm just like, oh my god. So I'm just going to say this right now, though. I am a 37-year-old man in the year of our Lord 2022. This movie was made for children in the year 1964, I believe. So this, you couldn't find a movie that was made less for me if you tried. All right? Like, perfect example. A huge, huge selling point of this film had to have been the animated sequences and then, like, the human characters interacting with the cartoon characters. That might have been something that movie audiences would not have seen at that level, certainly with that length.
Yeah, because I think I don't know the timing of this, because there was also that sequence with, like, Gene Kelly dancing with the mouse, but I don't... Yeah,
that would have been earlier.
Yeah, but I think that might be the only other example of something like that.
I mean, I'm sure there's like film historians who would know. Mm-hmm. But I'll be willing to bet that even if there were other examples, that this was probably a particularly high level one. And mm-hmm. as that sequence lasts forever, there probably wasn't a lot of other places, other films that did it that long. But me watching that as a 37-year-old man in the year of our Lord 2022, I was completely unimpressed by the special effects. It was completely like, oh, I've seen this a billion times because it's the year of our Lord 2022 and I'm a 37-year-old man. But a 8-year-old in 1964 might have just lost their fucking mind at that. And their parents would have also lost their fucking minds. Like, how is this even happening? What is going on? It's kind of like Star Wars in a way, where I am completely not impressed by Star Wars special effects, but understand that at the time they were so groundbreaking that they made up for lack of substance in the movie itself. Just, you know, doesn't age well. So when I say that I hate this movie and it made me wake up in a pile of blood, like, it's important to remember that I understand that this movie ain't for me. And I don't want to fault the film too badly because of that.
Yeah. Like, obviously, as a kid, I was perfectly into this movie. You know, now I don't really care. You know, it's I when I watched it, I was very aware that this was 2.5 hours and it was just like, ugh, fuck me. But, you know, at the time, you know, if that 2.5 hours worth of me being distracted, probably, you know, good times were had by all in that regard.
I don't want to just pile on this film. So I gotta think of something that I liked. Let's see. Julie Andrews is very good in this.
Yeah. I mean, this is, you know, considering it's funny because it's like she's just starting out and it feels like top form Julie Andrews. But then again, just because she's just starting out in movies, I mean, she'd already been a very successful, you know, stage actress. So, like, you know, she's there. She's ready. She's there to bring it. And she brought it.
Yeah. So, like, the acting on the stage versus acting on screen, as you know, as a professional actor, can be a pretty different animal. But it really helps that her first movie role plays to many of the strengths she would have picked up in Broadway. There's singing, there's dancing, and there's, like, and she's very good at both those things. When Mary Poppins is singing her songs, it looks great. When Mary Poppins is dancing with Dick Van Dyke, looks great. Any other actor who started from zero probably wouldn't have been able to do it if they'd never been in a film role before and also had never been at Broadway before. Probably wouldn't have worked out as well.
I mean, I think that's probably the case with Emily Blunt, and it is not as good. So,
Emily Blunt also wasn't a newcomer to film, so, like, this is all very impressive.
Yeah.
Like,
she just has a different skill set that's actually, like, honed.
Yeah, although I don't think that Julie Andrews would have been as effective starring in Edge of Tomorrow with Tom Cruise as Emily Blunt was. So,
very true. I mean, I would be, if there was, like, you know, like a, like, 1960s, 1970s version of Edge of Tomorrow with Julie Andrews, I'm not saying I wouldn't watch it. I would be interested.
I would be curious to see a 1960s big musical version of that.
She's not always in musicals.
No, I know, but now I'm just picturing... And also playing to her strengths. Like, you know, they definitely are going to have a song called Full Metal Bitch, where she, which is her I Want song. So, speaking of movies that I should have hated but actually liked. Oh, God, that dang film. All right, anyway.
I liked Edge of Tomorrow. I've had a fun time with it, yeah.
Yeah, I liked it, but I wanted to hate it.
Yeah.
Like, the casting of Tom Cruise in that role was laughably bad. The book is based on, it stars an 18-year-old Japanese kid being forced to be in a war, and this movie starred 50-year-old white Tom Cruise.
I didn't actually know anything about the book. That's a bummer. Oh, that would have changed things. I didn't realize that was, like,
oh my god, the book. Guess what the name of the book is, because it's not Edge of Tomorrow.
What?
All You Need Is Kill.
That's amazing.
It is fantastic. It is such a Japanese English-y title. I love it. Anyway, yeah. Something I'll point out. You know, the joke about Mary Poppins is that she's a time lady, aka Time Lord, the same race of the Doctor from Doctor Who. You know, having now watched this film, I am now ready to argue that point. Because you know, it's very fun to say that she's a Time Lord. Like, she obviously doesn't age now that we've seen you know, Mary Poppins returns, and there's some elements, like her her purse is obviously bigger on the inside. You know, it's very, very, very funny to say that. But
you're picking up companions, but all her companions are, like, most of her companions are children.
Well, you know, Bert is clearly a companion.
I know, but I'm saying, like, her primary, you know, in those Doctor Who series is where you have, like, you know, your normal Earth companions, but you also have, like, your other companions who are like, I really know the Doctor better, and I'm also not an Earthling, and I kind of feel like Bert kind of is in that range. Like,
I was going, like, to say that Bert, like, is Matt's, like, the Captain Jack of yes, Doctor Who companions.
Captain Jack, or what's his face, Matt, blah, 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 the bald guy with glasses.
Who, oh, like, yeah, I don't know his name. That guy, yeah, that guy's weird.
Yeah, little, that character's weird. Little Britain companion, yeah, that guy.
That character is where he's, I like him on, I like that guy on The Great British Breakoff, though.
Oh, I keep forgetting. Oh, Matt Lucas. Is that right? Is that Matt Lucas? Is that right?
I don't remember his name. I just remember he's, like, not Noel Fielding.
Yeah. Any hoops. But yeah, go on. Because, like, I think it's a funny joke, but I don't actually have a large opinion about it. So go on. Well,
because I always assumed, because I didn't see the movie and apparently didn't realize. But, you know, Mary Poppins has a lot of other powers. Like, Mary Poppins would be too much for the Doctor to handle. Let's be frank. She can control the wind.
Yeah.
Her powers know no bounds. She can bend reality to her whim. Like, and she doesn't seem to be consciously able to control it. Things just kind of happen around her. So she's so powerful that her aura changes reality in a way that makes things silly happen. And she's more annoyed by it than anything else.
She don't need no sonic screwdriver, that's for sure.
No, she'll just make the door open.
Yeah, she's just not. Yeah, it, like, kind of in the way that Doctor Who, like, for that little bit, can, like, make the TARDIS open with a snap. Yeah, it is kind of like her for, like, everything is her TARDIS.
It's like, do you think she has psychic paper to help her infiltrate places? No, she walks into a place, acts like she owns it, and then confuses the people there enough that they just give her what she wants. She doesn't need such things. Her force of will is just so powerful.
She just uses her magical gaslighting. That's all she needs.
Yeah. Not necessarily great for any romantic partner she has, but you know.
Oh, yeah. I mean, clearly she's in and out. Like, she's in for a lay, but she's out doing her thing. Like, clearly that's the case with Bert, you know. And he's just waiting until the next time she comes into town so he can get a piece of that. But, like, she's like, I gotta be free. I gotta be me. And I am not the relationship type.
Speaking of Travers, or no, excuse me, speaking of the relationship between Mary Poppins and Bert, one of Travers's big complaints with the script as it was being completed was she was adamant that there could not be anything romantic going on between those two characters. Mm-hmm. It was super important to her that was done, and Disney agreed, but they also kind of didn't. There was a lot more winking and nodding to that concept than Travers probably would have liked.
Yeah. I mean, the Jolly Holiday with Mary, like the 20-minute song, Jolly Holiday, whatever. Ugh. It's very, yeah. I mean, it's very affectionate between those two.
Yeah. I mean, like, I don't know. Like, half the dialogue in this movie is about how attractive Mary Poppins is. It's a little weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. God, I really want to think of things that positive things I want to say about this movie. I'm having a little trouble. Ariel, do you have anything you want to say? Because I'm just going to sit here and stew for a little bit, I think.
I think Jane is adorable. Like, I think she is just like the cutest little kid ever. I do not feel the same about Michael. Bless his heart. Let's see. I love hearing Julie Andrews sing. So, like, you know, her songs, you know, you're just here for it. I find the maid and the cook pretty funny. You know, I like their little bits in the background and their reaction to stuff. I think it's fun. And I like their dynamic between each other. Let's see. Dick Van Dyke playing old man bank president guy is fun physical comedy, you know, him trying to stay aloft with his old man body, with his cane. And I don't know.
Mr. Dawes Sr., I think.
Yeah. And I always think about, in the end, when he starts laughing too, and he has like the laughing and floating that he catches, and like the son, who is like fully, you know, so old that he himself was also an old man, just like screaming as he's floating away, "Daddy, Daddy!" Like, that does always make me laugh.
You know what? I will say that I did actually like that part, and the scene of like the uncle who wouldn't stop laughing and everyone's floating, I hated that scene, but I liked the payoff in that old man Dawes ended up like taking like a whole minute to try to get the joke that Mr. Banks told him, and then immediately starts floating when he gets it and starts laughing in the same way, like, oh, okay, that's a good payoff. And then a couple minutes later, his son informs our main characters that he died laughing. So that was weird. And he was like, oh, I'm sorry. Oh, don't be sorry. Who cares? He's dead. Have your job back.
Yeah, it's like, oh, don't worry about that. I have been waiting for him to die, and this was a lot nicer way for him to die than the poison I was planning to use. So, you know, it all works out.
Fun story about Dick Van Dyke. So Dick Van Dyke, when he got the part of Bert, he apparently lobbied super hard to also play Mr. Dawes, and somehow they let him do it. He does not play Mr. Dawes in the sequel because Mr. Dawes died laughing. But he does play Mr. Dawes Jr. in what is going to be one of the cutest castings I've ever heard of.
When you get to that part in the movie, you are just like, ah, I like this. Okay, it's weird that in the movie, you want... With the stuff with Dick Van Dyke, you're kind of waiting and hoping that there will be a similar moment with Julie Andrews. Like, you're hoping that she'll pop up in some way, just be, you know, some old lady who gives a wink to. And you get to the end, and like their version of Let's Go Fly a Kite is like balloon stuff. And it gets to this old lady reveal, and it's in Angela Lansbury, but there's like this weird like anticipation and wink to it being her, as if like it, like, but it's like, what is she to this movie? And it's odd. It's like it was supposed to be Julie Andrews, but for some reason it was like maybe Julie Andrews couldn't do it, and so they put Angela Lansbury in it. But then it's like, but then why do you have the same energy surrounding her? It's very confusing.
Well, I can tell you that your suspicions are correct. This role was indeed written for Julie Andrews. She was approached to return. She said no. She says the reason that she didn't want to do it was because she felt that her mere presence in the role would distract from Emily Blunt, and didn't want to do that. She wanted Emily to, you know, have the spotlight. Now, whether or not this is true, you know, who knows? Like, I'm not going to.
Who knows? I feel like that, if that is her genuine feeling, it doesn't really make sense, because that cameo is very small and it's at the end. So, like, I don't know.
She might have just had a very large opinion of her presence. But
that might be true.
I will say this for Angela Lansbury. She was one of the actors who was considered for the role of Mary Poppins when they were casting. Now, she was one of many, Julia Harris and Betty Davis were also considered. So I don't know. I mean, I guess you could say this is like a wink and a nod to those who know, like, Angela Lansbury could have been Mary Poppins, but it does seem a little weak.
Yeah.
It does seem a little bit of weak. They probably just could have, not have that scene. How about that? Let's stop talking about Mary Poppins Returns and start talking about the original Mary Poppins, which I've now decided that I've sat on my hands long enough, and I was going to say, Jesus Christ, this movie is barely a movie. Like, which would have been fine, I guess. You know, like, it was simple plot, simple characters. That's all that could be fine for a children's film. But I am particularly perturbed by how long stretches of just utter boring crap was happening on screen. Like, we were talking about the scene where they go into the chalk painting and then had an adventure where most people are just talking about how great Mary Poppins is, and they're interacting with mostly cartoon characters. That sequence lasts like, what, 20 minutes, and it is not interesting. It is not particularly fun. It goes
on forever. And like, they just keep doing more and more verses of this fucking song. Like, it's just...
It just keeps happening, and then there's like dancing with your pants down, and it's supposed to be charming, and it is just...
You gotta break out your penguin pants.
Even aside from that, like, it's basic, on the most basics of the film. I am, and I don't know if this was like this in the original novel, because it could have been, because I not read the book, but I am very confused as to exactly what the rules of the world are supposed to be prior to Mary Poppins' arrival. Because, like, my assumption would be that the world is perfectly mundane, then Mary Poppins with all her crazy magic shows up and then wrecks shit. But we apparently live in a world where, despite the fact that it's London, there is a neighbor with a goddamn cannon shooting off all times of the day, and not only does no one seem to mind, they, you know, bracing themselves for that level of destruction is a normal occurrence in the Banks household. No one even blinks.
Hey, he fought in the war. Show some respect. You gotta let him do what he wants to do.
Which war? Which war are we talking about?
You know, the war. He fought in the war.
No, it's just, I'm perturbed by this. Not because it's there, but because if you have that happening, you're already living in a pretty wacky world, right? Like, so, like, Mary Poppins doesn't seem to show up into a mundane world. She shows up in a crazy world, just that the Banks are boring. So, I don't know. That was, like, very early on, I was bothered by that. I find the movie has a lot of time to talk about how Mr. Banks is a problem that needs to be solved. I don't know that Mrs. Banks is any better.
I was just going to say that, yeah, both parents just seem pretty damn uninterested in their children.
How much time did Mrs. Banks spend not listening to the nanny and then freaking out at the prospect of having to take care of her children?
Yeah. I mean, like, she's nicer than Mr. Banks, that's for sure. But that's about it. They're both pretty negligent. She's just a nicer person than him.
Although I will say this about this movie, it absolutely passes the Bechdel test nice and early in the film.
True.
Votes for women. But I kind of find it interesting that Mr. Banks is the one that has to learn to appreciate his children, and Mrs. Banks is just like, oh, I guess I just continue eating bonbons in the corner or whatever I'm doing with all my day. I don't really understand Mr. Banks's character arc, as he spends most of the movie one way, and then disaster at work happens, and Mary Poppins sings to him, I think? And then...
Well, he has a chat with Bert, right? It's Bert.
No, I'm screwing that up. Okay. No, never mind. This time I'll cut that out.
He has a man-to-man, heart-to-heart with Bert, and I guess that does it.
Well, he doesn't respect women, so he wouldn't listen to Mary Poppins.
Of course. Yeah, that's true. Like, there's no way that he would have a come-to-Jesus moment with her.
I do find so much of the bank ridiculous, though. Like, why the theatrics for firing him?
Oh, yeah. punch a hole. Was it a company hat?
Even before that.
Yeah, come in at 9 o'clock at night to be fired.
Yeah, and then he comes to the office, and then it's like this council of, you know, it's like the Legion of Doom, like sitting in a dark room, all staring at him, and then they give him a speech about how this has never happened since the Boston Tea Party, and it seems like they're just telling him this just so they can fire him, as opposed to just reprimand him. And then yes, they punch a hole into his hat, which was the best part of the
company hat. Yeah, punch a hole through the company hat,
We'll get it back to him, though.
He doesn't want him to use it. turn his company umbrella inside out, because that's... He has the mark of a fired man on him. He's like, we got to make sure that as you're walking down the street tonight, everyone knows that you're jobless. And so we got to punch a hole through your hat.
And this whole sequence drives him insane. he starts laughing uncontrollably. He decides he loves his children and then runs off into the night and makes a kite. And then immediately gets a job back. It gets a promotion even.
Yeah.
How? Why? The movie is not interested in explaining.
I mean, in a way, he kind of got a promotion for killing a man.
Yeah, kind of. He murders that old man with a joke, and he's rewarded by becoming a partner in the bank. If this isn't Edwardian England, I don't know what is. Kill a man and take all his worldly possessions. I don't know. Like, this plot of this film, it had a hard time retaining me. And I was just kind of watching it, and I was just kind of like, this is boring, this is boring, this is dumb. This is a good song. This is boring. This is really dumb. It's just hard for me. But I will say, the thing that bothered me the most about this movie, for sure, was shortly after they are sucked up the chimney and are on the roof, and they're having their little song and dance, and then suddenly a legion of chimney sweeps just burst out of various places in sometimes body horror ways. And then they have a really long number. Let me tell you, flat out, they do the Chimchiri song, which is like the one that ended up winning an Oscar. And then the song after that is Step in Time. And that goddamn song, according to the soundtrack, is over eight and a half minutes.
It like makes me think of like, you know, when you're like, say, like at camp or something, and you are singing camp songs, and you just keep adding shit. Like, it's like the kind of song that's really easy to just insert a thing, and then you do another verse, and you do another thing, or blah, 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 blah. And like, could you just... All you gotta do is, like, yell out, slap a baby, step in time, slap a baby, step in time. And it just, like, you just keep calling, and it's just like, oh my god.
It's just, the whole sequence became a horror film to me. Especially when they all started jumping into the chimney and to the Banks' house. Can you imagine just being in your home, mind your own business, and then suddenly an army of dirt-covered men shoot out of your chimney screaming Step in Time at you over and over again, and anything you say, it's like, who are you? Who are you? Step in Time. Like, what? It was like this. It felt like I was watching a zombie film when the zombies are really interested in singing. No, that's me arm. That's me arm. That's me arm. Step in time.
Please don't kill me. Please don't kill me. Step in time. Please don't kill me. Step in time. I will say, is the whole Step in Time stuff reminds me that I have like the smallest of connections with Mary Poppins. I guess in recent years, I guess in like the last decade, they did make a stage version of Mary Poppins, and it was in like the West End and on Broadway. And I know the choreographer for the Broadway production of Mary Poppins, because he was my choreographer for a production of Dreamgirls. And the fun thing is about that, it's a famous choreographer, Stephen Mear, and his husband is deaf. And so with like supercalifragilisticexpialidocious and stuff, for the choreography for that, he actually uses, like, he was inspired by sign language a bit, like for the choreography of that song and stuff like that. And I just, it's actually pretty cool. If you have a chance to see Mary Poppins in like a Broadway tour or something like that, it's pretty fun. It's pretty fun stuff.
Okay. Let's move on to characters. And spoiler alert, almost all the characters are pointless. Like they do almost nothing. But I do want to talk about Mary Poppins, Julie Andrews. We talked about her a lot, but I do want to point out that
Oh.
Hello?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
I can.
All right.
Yeah, that didn't. That wasn't just freezing. That was like it. It was ringing. The Skype was ringing.
Yeah, that's actually That's actually happened twice on my end.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Someone's connection here is not good. I don't know which one of us it is.
It's probably me. I feel like I've been having trouble with. I don't know what's going on with my Wi-Fi. I've been like kicked off of Zooms and stuff, and I don't know what to do. But yeah, I don't know.
All right. Anyway, I have not read the original Mary Poppins books, but I spent the whole time watching this film thinking, like, man, Julie Andrews' character would be a lot better if she was meaner. It seemed like there was like such opportunity for like more snark and just like kind of like there's a scene where after they go to the park and go to the magical cartoon world, the kids are in bed, they're talking about it, and Mary Poppins is like, the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah. Classic Julie Andrews Mary Poppins gaslighting.
Yeah, they're like, oh, we went to this magical world. I was like, do I look like the type of person that goes to a magical world, for Christ's sakes? And I was thinking, like, man, I would have liked to see more of that. Like, more of that in there. But, yeah, it's... It seems like there was, like, shades of a more interesting version of Mary Poppins here, but we don't quite get it. Like, I would like to have seen a more egotistic Mary Poppins. And we see a little bit of that as she declares herself practically perfect in every single way.
Singing duets with herself in the mirror because she likes her face. Although, the reflection is rather cheeky.
Yeah, I don't think Mary Poppins completely controls her reality warping abilities. She also doesn't seem to give a shit. Like, she does not care that she's causing such chaos. But again, Julie Andrews is great for what she's doing. She's the best part of this film, certainly.
That just made me think of, oh, just her reality warping stuff. It was like, oh, maybe Mary Poppins is more of a MCU Scarlet Witch kind of character than a Time Lord kind of character.
Oh man, do you think that she's actually holding London hostage? And Bert is actually the Vision?
Bert actually died like a year ago, and this is Mary Poppins dealing with her grief. She completely like makes up Jade and Michael.
Do you think that Bert and Mr. Dawes are actually like the equivalent of Vision versus White Vision?
There is that whole deleted song when they talk about the ship of Theseus, so yeah.
Hey, Gavlan, you know about the ship of Theseus? Naturally. Speaking of Bert, if Dick Van Dyke was doing any other less cartoony, ridiculous, stupid accent, I think I might have been able to handle Bert a little better. But Bert is kind of this weird character that Mary Poppins is mysterious. Like, we don't know anything about her background. Although apparently somewhere in the books, at some point, it's suggested that her thing is that all babies when they're born are magical, but when they grow up, they forget and lose all their magic powers, and Mary Poppins did not, and so retains all her baby magic, which is fun. I don't even know if that's an official thing, but I think if it is, it's fun.
That stuff like that, like when stories would have those kind of things, that kind of shit used to hit me so hard as a child. Like... And, like, the idea is, like, I need to get my magic back and all this kind of stuff. And, like, I so did not want to become adult. It was ridiculous. The Toys R Us song used to make me cry a little bit. Because I don't want to grow up because I couldn't be a Toys R Us kid.
Oh, that Toys R Us song was so full of shit. Because what they don't tell you is that when you grow up, you can still go to Toys R Us and just buy whatever you want.
Yeah, you can have more access to toys as an adult.
Yeah, and... You can drink beer and then go do it. You can go to Toys R Us drunk.
I could literally, like, have my ice cream at noon, pour a shot in it, and then get toys for myself. Yeah, they don't tell you all the stuff.
They don't tell you that. But anyway, while Mary Poppins is mysterious, and that makes sense that she's mysterious, Bert is also mysterious, and I don't understand why. Like, Bert has, he is somehow... related to Mary Poppins' past. He knows her. He knows her uncle, apparently. And he seems to have the ability to break the fourth wall, which itself seems like a magical ability.
Oh, maybe Bert is actually more of a Monica Rambeau, that he has been incorporated into Mary Poppins' magic so much that his DNA has been changed and now he's a bit magical.
Are you trying to say that Bert is actually a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent who's trying to rescue London but failing?
Yeah, but you know what? He sees where she's coming from, and like, he's not so sure that she's actually a bad person. So,
well, I mean, all his dialogue is talking about how great she is. Oh God, all the dialogue of this film is talking about how great she is. Like, this is really kind of making it seem like she's the center of things. I kind of want to know exactly what the deal between Bert and Mary Poppins was and exactly what's going on there, but we never find out. It's a little annoying. The character kind of has almost Silent Bob aspect to him, where he's not super important to the plot until suddenly he has a speech that fixes everything.
Yeah.
And he's got a terrible accent on top of everything else. So, like, he's almost completely insufferable as a character. Now, which sucks, because Dick Van Dyke's dancing his ass off in this movie.
Yeah, he's fun to watch, you know? From the beginning, his whole, like, his street performer, one-man band situation, and the way he, you know, hits his head on the horn and stuff. I mean, like, ooh, the amount of energy that man had, like...
Yeah, but unfortunately, the character's kind of bad, and Dick Van Dyke's accent makes it worse. Apparently, he had a speech coach that taught him that accent, and I think that guy trained him wrong as a joke. To quote Kung Pao.
Oh my God! What a fucking bummer.
Almost every other character in this movie is unimportant. Technically, Mr. Banks is probably the third most important character, because really the movie is about his character arc. But I think I've already kind of talked about him. I don't really know how much I have to say, other than he doesn't seem like he's a good guy. Like, you're right. Like, he nothing really happens to make me think that he's turned a corner. He just seems to want to spend time with his kids, which is, by the way, the bare minimum that a person should do, like, in that situation. He still seems to think women are terrible. He doesn't, apparently, he never says it, but they heavily imply that he, in fact, does not like the idea of women voting.
Yeah, no, 100%. Like, he seems to view his wife's interest in this is like something to do, maybe, you know, it keeps her occupied, but he certainly does not give a fuck about women's voting rights. For him, like, I know, like, he was in Bed Knobs and Broomsticks and
David Tomlinson,
yeah, and you know, and then Dick Van Dyke was in Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. I definitely do consider those movies along with this of like of a set, you know, like, and I never really watched either of those other two movies, but like, it feels like all part of a certain era. Like, I know a lot of other people have connections to like Bedknobs and Broomsticks and Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. I do not. But did you ever watch either of those?
So I've never seen Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. We watched Bedknobs and Broomsticks all the time.
I don't remember a single fucking thing about it. I don't remember watching it at all.
You might have been too young. But yeah, we used to watch that a lot when we were kids, to the point that I'm surprised to hear you say that. I mean, I don't remember a ton about it, so I must have been pretty young too. But yeah, no, I watched that a lot. I remember there was animated sections in Bedknobs and Broomstick as well. Now I feel like I might have to watch it.
Well, you know what? Okay. I can picture the bed, kind of. Like, I can kind of have, like, an image of, like, their travel. But that's, like, it. It is, like, the most vague. So I'm guessing that must be a memory of watching it that I simply just don't really remember.
David Tomlinson was also in The Love Bug. So throw another one. Mm-hmm. In there. Good Lord, I don't know. Is there anyone else I need to talk about? Is this... Everyone seems so inconsequential to everything.
Well, you have, like, the kids who play in Jane and Michael, which, funny enough, like, they also, like, a couple years later, do another Disney movie where they also play siblings. That one is the Gnomemobile. I know nothing about what that's about, but they're siblings again. But the woman who plays Jane, Karen Dotrice, she does have, like, I think she has, like, a little, like, cameo in Mary Poppins Returns. And Matthew Garber, it's a bit sadder because he actually died when he was, like, 21. It says that he was, like, in India and contracted hepatitis, and he came back to England to get treatment, but it was too late, and he ended up getting a really horrible, like, case of pancreatitis, and he ended up dying, and he was only 21.
Yeah, I did know that he had died when he was 21. I didn't know those details. Anybody else you want to talk about, or should we move on to music?
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, just a shout out to Hermione Baddeley and Retta Shaw. That's the maid and the cook. I you know, they have little bit parts, but I thought they did it well. So, you know, whatever.
Okay. Ariel, would you mind kind of walking us through the songs that appear in this film?
Okay. So you have the Suffragette song, Sister Suffragette. You have Mr. Banks's I Dig My Life song, The Life I Live, a song about getting a nanny, the perfect nanny, when they're, like, writing their letters about what kind of nanny they want. Spoonful of Sugar, which everyone knows. Dick Van Dyke singing about drawing on the pavement, which, you know, it's just a kind of a, goes along with, like, the Chim Chimney, like, Cherie song orchestration. Jolly Holiday, the night. It's funny, if you look on, like, Wikipedia, it says that Jolly Holiday is, like, 5 or so minutes. But it's like, if only all of that shit. I guess if you take away all the things that happen in that whole montage, I guess maybe it's only 5 minutes of singing, but sweet God. Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. You know, when you're a kid, it's always exciting when you can say it well enough, and you're like, I'm ready for college. The little, like, lullaby song, Stay Awake, which I always forget about. I Love to Laugh, the floating around song with the uncle. British Bank Stuff. Feed the Birds, which I like better than the lullaby song. If I want a soothing lullaby song for Julie Andrew, I prefer Feed the Birds. Chim Chim Cherie. Step in Time, burp, 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 burp. More song with Mr. Banks, A Man Has Dreams. I can't even remember what the tune is. And then Let's Go Fly Kite, because we're a happy family now. So you got a lot of songs.
Yeah, there's a ton of songs on this. I was actually kind of not surprised. Here's the thing about this. At least half of these songs are bad. And yeah, dull as hell.
Very, very forgettable, a lot of it.
This is a soundtrack done by the legendary Sherman Brothers, so Richard Sherman and Robert Sherman. You know, the songs that you know from this, even if you haven't seen this movie, those are the good ones.
Yeah.
And some of them are particularly great. Like, I used to get in trouble for dancing to Let's Go Fly a Kite while going to a movie theater that routinely played it in the speakers outside, and I get in trouble. The songs that are good, they're good. The songs that are not good are heavily upsetting and bad and boring. I shouldn't say they're, like, super upsetting and bad, but they're definitely dull. Dull as dirt. The life I lead, I could have, like, blinked and not even noticed it was there. I don't know. But, you know, I will also say this, Chim Chim Cherie is apparently the big song for this. This is the one that won the Oscar. Is Chim Chim Cherie that great of a song? I'm not even sure it's the best song. It feels, like, kind of empty in a way.
I think it's actually pretty fucking boring.
No, but it is, you even like in the beginning of the film where they're doing kind of the overture with the credits, it turns into an instrumental version of this, and then they start singing. It is, in fact, and again, this that was the one that got nominated for an Oscar and won. It won the Oscar for best song. So it's like,
you know, if I were like, you know, going into a waltz, I think it would be lovely to waltz to this song. Mm. But I don't waltz, so here we are.
My opinion of the soundtrack is like, it's probably pretty similar to a lot of the Sherman Brothers work. When it hits well, but a lot of it is dull, and I could have done without.
Yeah, I mean, I think the bangers are the bangers. Like, obviously, you always want to have a bit of Spoonful of Sugar. You know, Supercalifragilistic and whatnot is, you know, it's a... I might have to add that to a running playlist, because that's probably... It's probably a good song to run to. But it's just kind of... The good ones are the good ones. Step in Time actually probably would be a pretty good thing to run to, too. That's neither here nor there. I'm not picking favorite songs for the sake of, like, running to them. So, like, just because I'm going to run to them does not mean I'm particularly into the song. But, yeah. Don't feed the birds. Oh, yeah. Also, don't fucking feed the birds. I live in Chicago. Don't fucking feed the birds. Don't do it. We don't need it. Anyone who has been on the lake train stop for, like, the Green Line and, like, Purple Line, that stop that is just, like, riddled with fucking pigeons, don't feed the goddamn birds. They are bold, and you're feeding them, and it makes them bolder. Something needs... One of these creatures in this city needs to fucking fear me.
But I want to feed the birds.
Get a fucking parrot for your own fucking apartment and stop feeding the pigeons on the street.
They're my toppings, and I want to feed the birds.
Between the bold pigeons on the train stops and the evil geese on the in the parks... Jesus Christ, leave all... Stop feeding any of the birds. Leave them all alone.
Well, you don't have a choice if you feed the geese or not. If you've got food, those geese are going to jump you.
They are... Have you ever had a geese hiss at you? I have.
I stay the fuck away from geese whenever I see them. I am scared of geese. I'm more scared of geese than dogs because most dogs are on leashes.
Yeah. I had to... load in, we were doing loadout for a touring show, and I guess the loading dock must have been by a goose's nest. We were clearly in their territory, and they wanted us the fuck out of there, and it was terrifying. Having a goose hiss at you and approach you threateningly is fucking terrifying.
Okay, let's wrap up here. So Ariel, what would you give Mary Poppins? Would you give it a thumbs up, a thumbs down, or a thumb somewhere in the middle?
I feel like I'd probably give this a thumbs in the middle. I mean, like, it's still a movie that you could totally watch with your kids, you know, blah, 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 magic time. You know, if they're young enough, they might get them in before they're old enough to know what good special effects are. But... You know, it's, I think it's still like a thing that like a little kid can enjoy. I don't really care much about it anymore. Like, I feel like, you know, my sweet little nephew, I think he'll have a nice like 2-year window where he could be super into this. But like beyond that, I don't know. So like, middle. I don't think it's like bad, but like it's meh.
Oh, well, I think it's bad. So I want to give it a thumbs down. Okay. I think this movie is... pretty dull. I think it is very low plot, and then there's a lot of padding. This movie did not need to be as long as it was. This could have been a much shorter movie and lost nothing. I think that there's also kind of this element of you feeling like you're not quite getting the best version of things, especially when it comes to Mary Poppins. Like, I really feel like she is... just you can just kind of tell that there's a better version of Mary Poppins somewhere, and we're just not getting it. That version of Mary Poppins is in the book, so if you really want to see that, you can check that one out, as long as you're okay with her not being as attractive as Julie Andrews, I guess.
Which, I mean, you're reading it, so whatever.
Yeah, okay.
But, like, also, yeah, it's as long as, yeah, if you're ready to embrace Bitch Poppins, yeah, go for it.
It's going to do it for us. I am acutely aware that apparently the only musical that I've enjoyed through this time frame was Popeye, which is ridiculous.
What a surprise win. I didn't expect it, you know, like in our March bracket, who thought that Popeye was going to reign victorious?
Yeah. So is Popeye one of the top five greatest musicals ever made? Well, maybe we got to talk about it now.
I'm going to be honest, after, you know, going through that movie, I have legit added He Needs Me and Sail With Me to one of my indie playlists. And, you know, honestly, they actually kind of fit in pretty well.
Well, there you go, folks. Stop sleeping on Popeye. It's okay to sleep on everything else. All right. So that's going to do it for us this week. So next week, we did not plan anything. So we just threw something together while we were talking. Hopefully I edited that out. But next week, we're going to be touching on a movie that I, you know, I'm scared of this movie because there's a thing about it that I'm aware of, and I'm afraid that if I notice it, even though it's intellectually in my brain, it's going to cause me to not be able to watch it without throwing up. So I won't say what it is.
Oh, no.
But
oh, thank you for not.
But what the movie is going to be is the live action original live action adaptation of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, a movie that I would have watched a million times as a kid and then forced everyone around me to watch it a million times as well.
As I might have, I'm pretty sure I've mentioned before how much as a child I liked matching my food to my media. This was one of them. We used to have these delightfully shitty, not freezer pizzas, like refrigerator pizzas. And I would tell my mom, one, burn that shit to a crisp, because that's how I like it, and let's get this movie going. In fact, I haven't had pizza since the time I was over at your place, and I've been saving my, you know, cholesterol points, I guess, for, like, eating pizza later, and I might order a pizza when I watch this movie.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I had pizza, like, three times since then. But, you know, but yeah, I'm interested, looking forward to it, you know, kind of. I'm also afraid that I'm going to screw it up and never be able to watch it again. We'll see. But
I'm so afraid now.
We're, if you guys want to get a hold of us, maybe you want to tell us what you thought about Mary Poppins, maybe you want to tell us that we're wrong about Popeye, you're wrong about Popeye. But if you want to make the argument, we'll listen. But you can email us at adultsiblingsversus@gmail.com, or you can tweet at us at adultversus on Twitter. Our theme song is Sell Out by Zombie Apocalypse Now from the EP Forbidden Tales of Science. You can find that and more at antizombierock.bandcamp.com. So, Ariel, before we go, I did want to ask you a quick question. What other modern movies do you think that Julie Andrews could have been, you know, would have made better if she starred in, and also it was a musical?
Saw.
Would she be playing Jigsaw, or would she be one of the people being tortured?
Oh, both. She has range. You know, you got like green screens. But like, if I only had to choose one, obviously Jigsaw. But yeah.
Also, you know what? I can't imagine Julie Andrews being someone else's apprentice. So if she's gonna make it to the sequel, she's gotta be Jigsaw.
I think the fact that she wasn't approached in the beginning maybe was a missed opportunity. But, you know, there's always time to rectify these kind of things.
Well, you know what? We're going to get on the horn with Chris Rock, who apparently is the creative director of Saw these days for some reason, and talk to him about possibly getting Julie Andrews in the sequel to Spiral. But until next time, as always, please do not put a dirty sock in your younger sibling's mouth, or else Mary Poppins might come by and put us out for it.
Yeah. Rum punch.
Is she an alcoholic?
I think so. She's just tricking on the job.
Okay. Yeah.